All right, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of the Extra Rounds podcast, post-UFC 205 edition. We're going to be talking everything about UFC 205, the three title fights, the historic event at Madison Square Garden. We're going to have Brian Caraway joining the show at 2:30. We're also going to talk to Gegard Mousasi, Uriah Hall, who fight in the main event of a doubleheader. They're fighting on the card in Brazil this weekend, so we'll talk to the two of them. We're also talking to Ryan Bader and Lil Nog. They fight in the Brazil portion of the card. I'm sorry, Mousasi and Hall fight in the Belfast portion of the card.
Right.
I messed that up.
So many cards, gets confusing, right, man.
So we're talking to them, but we're going to upload that separately as a interview plus that you'll be able to get on iTunes, hopefully either tonight or tomorrow morning. So be on the lookout for that so you can hear all things Ryan Bader and Lil Nog as they main event the Brazil portion of the card. But first things first, let's talk about UFC 205. Did you watch?
Yeah, definitely watched it.
Of course.
But I didn't have the type of seat you did. You were in New York City, and I've been, you know, ever since you went out there, I've been wanting to ask you, what was it like? Because I've been to a bunch of events like yourself, never been to one in New York City, because there really hasn't been one in New York City.
Right.
So what was the atmosphere like?
So, obviously, the atmosphere in the event itself, the press conference, the weigh-ins, the fight, further along in the prelims, was all electric, and there was definitely a lot of energy. You know, it's another 16,000 people attended the weigh-ins, 20,000+ at the fights itself. So that was a big part of it. But the thing about New York is that it's such a big city, and there's so much to do and going on there that it doesn't have the same feel as it would in other cities or Las Vegas, like the MGM. So I'll compare this to wrestling because I have a friend who we go to WrestleMania every year. So we've gone to Miami, New York, New Orleans, Dallas, shows all over. And the New York one felt the same way as this UFC card did, that there just wasn't a lot of hype about it because they're so big. If you're in the bubble, which for the UFC was like around Madison Square Garden, then it's a big thing and you're running into a lot of UFC fans because everybody's around the area because they're excited. But if you venture away from that, it's, you know, it becomes people don't know about it. You know, with the New Orleans card for WrestleMania, everything was in the Superdome and the French Quarter, which was like the small little area, and they're, you know, half a mile from each other, and you just walk around and you see all the fans and whatnot. But then when it was in New York, you know, everything was so spread out, you just, unless you were, they had, you know, their Fan Fest and New Jersey and stuff in Times Square, and if you weren't in those areas, it seemed like nobody was aware of it. But that's not the UFC's fault at all, by any means. That's just the way New York is.
Yeah, it's a big city. That's interesting. It makes a lot of sense when you say that, but I hadn't thought about it because you're right. In our bubble, we're talking about what a big deal it is to go to New York. And it is, probably for that reason, right? Like, this is a big, challenging market. And obviously, the card did well. I think they sold out and stuff. But it's a different thing. We got such a large city. Yeah.
New York almost makes it seem like a bigger deal outside of New York than actually in the city, because the city's so big and there's so much going on. But because all the media, like a lot of media call New York home, there's more press and coverage and those kind of things, and that makes it a bigger deal nationally to the person watching at home.
It's almost like a brand, like we're a New York event and it has cachet because we're in New York,
right? You know, but like when you've gone to enough of the ones in Vegas, and Dana White's talked about it, there's just different, like everything's under one roof. Like you stay at the MGM and it's the whole building's UFC 205, and you don't really need to go anywhere else. And even if you do, you're running into other UFC people. Like, it takes over the strip.
No, that's true. So much of Vegas's economy is around fights, and it has been for some time. UFC has been successful in that fight industry. So yeah, you run into fans all over. It's not so much, even people who clearly aren't fans, and I'm sure you run into this, Mike, in Vegas, they're like aware of it. They're excited about it. They're like, oh yeah, here for the UFC. I heard about so-and-so. They're looking for fighters that they probably don't know the names of, but they're excited. So yeah, it's got a small town feel in that way when it comes to fights.
Yeah, and you see people who are in Vegas and they're just so excited. And I've seen it, people like walking around and they're like, oh, is that so-and-so? Is that so-and-so? Yeah. It's like a different atmosphere because you can have those chance encounters.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting because the fighters were staying at a hotel like right across the street. So they'd walk back and forth from like media events and stuff. So that was kind of a cool, interesting thing that made it feel Vegas-like.
That is pretty cool. We should have gotten him out. We'll chat with him some point, hopefully, and maybe take a moment to reflect on this. But I heard Madison Square Garden is really, really close, like across the street close to one of the biggest mixed martial arts academies in the world, which is the Henzo Gracie's Academy. Mm-hmm. And Henzo had so many people in his lineage fighting on the card, like Frankie Edgar, you know, Eddie Alvarez, all these folks. But some, I remember leading up to it, I forget which one now, might have been, I think Sapo was on that card. They were planning to do his warm-up in the academy, like before the fight on fight night, like club up and then go across the street and like warm up there and then walk for the fight. It was that close. I mean, that's about as close as you get in New York, I guess, as that type of like weird Vegas, small town feel. But I wonder what it was like for those guys. If the academy was filled with people, it'd be a fun thing to ask them about sometime.
Right. Well, let's move on to the card itself. One of the biggest talking points aside from Conor McGregor was the welterweight fight. Mm. Tyron Woodley, Stephen Thompson. I believe we've had both on the show.
Yeah.
So
yeah. you know damn well we did. We're just bragging about it.
Hashtag humble brag. So what was your initial reaction? What did you make of it? Did Woodley win the fight? Should it have been a draw? Did Thompson win the fight? What was your reaction?
I thought it was about as close as you can get. I think a draw is a really fair way of a fair decision, because it came down to scoring philosophy. In my mind, Stephen Thompson won 3 rounds. The way he won those rounds was very different from the 2 he lost. He looked like he was near death when he lost the rounds he lost, because Woodley connected with big power shots, followed up, and looked like he was getting Thompson out of there. Thompson is just ungodly tough in condition, so he ended up doing well at the end of both of those rounds. But yeah, it was a weird thing, because of course we're supposed to add up rounds and score it that way with the unified system, which I don't love. But you know, there's a good argument for some of the rounds Thompson won being so close, that so little offense, effective striking and stuff being implemented, that they were even rounds. So as dissatisfying as it probably is for, I mean, I guess Stephen Thompson, who I spoke with over text briefly afterwards, you know, I'm sure he was disappointed, but he seemed encouraged that he would come back even stronger. As disappointing as that can be, it's at least probably something that seems fair. Like, it's hard to say one of those guys was a loser, because it was such a weird, great fight that had ebbs and flows. You know, just when you thought Thompson was certainly going to be knocked out, he comes out and finishes a round on top, striking from, it's like, what do you do with that? It looked like it was going to be like a 10-2 round that he ended on top, landing punches. Like, what do you do with that? You know, it's tough.
Just an incredible back and forth fight between the two. I think it all comes down to like how you scored the third round. Mm. But if you gave the third round to Thompson, then, and you have to give one of the two rounds, most likely the fourth round, a 10-8, then the majority draws the decision. But what's weird is that one judge gave Woodley a 10-8 in the first round, yeah, and then another gave him in the 10-8 and then the fourth, different judge.
Yeah.
So that's how those two judges came to the majority draw decision.
Yeah,
I think that's how it worked out.
I think so too. Yeah, which is an interesting way to get there.
But it's like if the three judges had all done, like, given him the 10-8 round in both of those, he would have won 47-46.
Yeah, and there's a good argument for him deserving 10-8 in at least one of those. So yeah, it's tough.
It's just incredible that Woodley almost finished him like 3-4 times in the fight. It's a lot of heart and determination from Wonder Boy.
It's amazing.
So is that the next fight to make? You run it back right away?
Jeez. You know, it seems very fair. The only problem to doing that in my mind is that I think both guys deserve a long rest. So you got to wait a while after a brutal fight like that, especially for Thompson. You got to wait a while. Maybe he'll disagree, right? I'm sure he does. I'm sure he'll fight Woodley tomorrow if you give him the chance. At the same token, I feel like Damian Maia earned his title shot a long time ago as well. Like, I had him and Thompson as co-number one contenders, kind of like I have Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov. Oh, good Lord. I butchered it. I've been practicing all weekend. I swear I did it really great talking with my friends. Khabib, the Eagle, I think they're both number one contenders at lightweight. So it's a frustrating situation when it comes to, like, Damian Maia. I don't want him waiting in the wings. I want him to have to take more fights. But if both of these guys can agree on a timeline, and if Damian Maia or Conor McGregor doesn't end up fighting Tyron Woodley, which I think would be rare or unlikely, then I think you do a rematch and you make it a main event. What about you?
I mean, I think it left so indecisive.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that anybody disagreed with it.
Sure.
But there just wasn't a clear winner.
You don't know who the better man is. Yeah.
So I think for that regard, you have to run it back. So I do understand Maya's plight, but I think
secondary, you know, at this point to this,
what can you do,
right,
if you're
right.
him? It's not his fault, and it's not legit. Their fault necessarily either. I mean, unless you, but anyways, let's move along to the star of the evening, Conor McGregor. He basically had a outstanding performance, living up to everything he said he was going to do. He's won both belts. He's featherweight champion. He's a lightweight champion. At this moment, he still has both belts.
Yeah.
Despite what Dana White said. Do you strip him or do you give him a chance to defend two belts?
The interesting question to me is if the UFC has the power to do that. And I think Conor McGregor is sending signals that he's taking a stance where he's not accepting things that have been accepted before in terms of positions of power. The UFC, unlike boxing, isn't under the Ali Act, and so they don't have a lot of they don't have the type of regulation around independent rankings needing to be in place and independent bodies that issue belts and all sorts of stuff like that. So they just kind of keep it in house. It's a really symbolic thing, but that symbolism of these belts has real material impact on fighters' lives for opportunities like endorsements. To their, you know, obviously things like rankings play in, and the UFC controls their own rankings, which is tied into to Reebok pay and stuff like that. So it's a weird, convoluted thing. But I think Conor McGregor deserves a chance to, if we weren't dealing with all sorts of interesting tension between the two, potentially a big battle, and that wasn't an issue. I think Conor McGregor deserves a chance to, by some point in December, accept a date at some point in the future to defend the featherweight title, which would give him a year between winning and accepting the next fight. I think that's fine. And then he'll have a year between winning the lightweight title to accept or fight and defend that title. I think we see so many boxers at the highest levels get away with fighting once a year to defend. I don't think you can strip people ethically without a champion, without giving them a chance, especially when someone a chance within a year to defend it or accept a fight to defend their belt, one of their belts, especially when someone is active, Conor McGregor, who's fighting different opponents on short notice and stuff like that. So I don't think he should be stripped. I think it's good for Conor McGregor and for pay-per-views if this guy holds more belts. The only reason they might consider doing it is because he's accumulating too much power and he's becoming his own promotional beast. And I think that is more threatening to the UFC. Otherwise, there's no reason to even talk about stripping him.
Well, this has just added to his popularity, so I wanted to bring this up today. For those of you who don't know, FanSided is doing this thing. It's an inaugural thing, Fandom 250, where basically we're gathering the 250 greatest fan bases around the world, sports, entertainment. It's not one or the other. It's all fan bases together and ranking them. And the rankings don't come out until early December, December 6th, actually. But they're announcing 10 things at 10 things that have made the list at a time. So today they announced the next set of 10, and that 10 included the UFC, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, and Brock Lesnar,
who's pretty cool.
Also in there partially for the WWE stuff. Yeah. But so those four things have been announced. So the interesting thing about this, though, was that the UFC was nominated as a whole.
Yeah.
Were you surprised to see the UFC, no other league like the NBA, NFL, none of that got in there? Were you surprised to see that UFC fans as a whole got nominated as a group?
It is definitely remarkable, like you're saying, but I'm not surprised because that's by and large been their approach to promoting. It's brand first, league first, if you want to call the league, organization first, and fighter stars afterwards. So I think the UFC has become a name so synonymous with the sport of mixed martial arts at a professional level that it makes sense, kind of like a Xerox, meaning like a copy, or a Kleenex, meaning a tissue paper, right? Like, it's different than the NFL in that way, or MLB. You still say baseball, you still say football, you might say pro football, or pro baseball. So it makes sense. It is definitely an interesting thing that's worth remarking on. Good, bad, I don't know. But I wasn't surprised because so many people, they think of UFC as the name of a sport, Ultimate Fighting as the name of a sport, you know?
It's like a Band-Aid or Kleenex.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, like the product is so synonymous
with that
thing.
You stole my Kleenex example, but I didn't say Band-Aid.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Band-Aid. No, yeah, there's some brands that are so strong where they can, you know, we don't think about it. We just
exactly.
You know?
And you guys can join the conversation on Twitter and social media by using hashtag Fandom250. For the three fighters that were involved, who has more fans? Or better fans?
Yeah.
That's ultimately, really, this is about which fan base is the best, not which one is the largest.
Yeah. Well, Connor's, in terms of best, I mean, Connor's fans seem to follow him around the world, which is kind of interesting to see. I heard there were a lot of folks to travel to New York. I've seen people travel from Ireland to Vegas for certain to see him. I don't know. I think you probably want to go with like Brock Lesnar having more, because he's been on the WWE and MMA scene longer than either Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey, and he has that mixture. Ronda Rousey, I think, has the most mainstream awareness like around her, but I don't know if they're like fan-sided fans. Conor, though, is knocking on the door for total fans. He has to be, because, I mean, Edgar Alvarez, as great as he is, and I think he's, you know, he's a future Hall of Famer, people unfairly didn't really know who he was, unless you're like a hardcore MMA fan.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm getting at is what is probably the best-selling UFC in history, breaking two previous Conor McGregor-led cards, was something that he probably carried completely on his own. So now if you look at like the last 9 months, he sold more pay-per-views in a year than any boxer probably has since Mike Tyson. So like, he's got to be getting really, really popular. I'm just guessing, you know?
We were talking earlier, and I think Conor McGregor wins. Brock Lesnar surely has a lot of fans. Ronda Rousey surely has a lot of fans. Ronda Rousey, Brock would be the lesser of the three, I think, because he has a lot of fans. But it's not, people aren't as invested in Brock Lesnar as they are the other two. Ronda Rousey, she transcends the mainstream, so she kind of pulls fans from different areas. And she definitely, she's been a big supporter of women and empowering women, and she definitely has a strong following there. But what you see with McGregor is ridiculous. The amount of people that were at the weigh-ins, it was like 15,000-16,000, is a bigger number than a lot of UFC events. Most UFC events.
Yeah, right.
And that's just for a weigh-in, and not even an actual weigh-in, fake weigh-in. And that in itself, I mean, like the Irish people traveling and the singing, I mean, it's gotten to the point where Conor McGregor doesn't even have to get into his opponent's heads anymore. Yeah. His fans do it for him. Like, you saw it at the press conference. Like, the fans were chanting at Eddie, and Eddie's focus was strictly on the fans. So
that's crazy.
It's been, you know, an interesting thing to watch his rise. And I think fans are so much more invested in Conor McGregor than they are in Ronda Rousey. I think Ronda Rousey brings a lot of appeal, and she's maybe by far more famous.
Yeah.
But I think he's got a better fan base.
That makes sense. It's a really cool thing you guys are doing as well. I think that's a fun thing to be voting on.
But since the UFC is on the list, Conor McGregor says he wants a piece of that pie.
Yeah.
Do you think he deserves equity in the company?
I do, actually.
I would have thought you would have been like, no.
Yeah, no. I actually do. I think put it this way, I think he's got a really good argument for it for a couple reasons. One, as crazy as it seems, because the UFC has never had anything like that, it's actually not without precedent in two ways. One, with the current new owners of the UFC, WME, IMG, they opened up shares of the company to clients of theirs. They represent a lot of, you know, A-listers out there. So now we've got a whole bunch of, you know, undetermined amount of like, or unknown amount to the public of minority share owners. So they're doing that type of piecemeal parsing out of stuff, right? And secondly, in boxing, it's not unheard of at all. People who sell less and draw less than Conor McGregor who are in boxing long ago transitioned into promoter roles, right? It's actually a very common thing. You'll even see it like in the music industry. You get to a certain level and they might give you your own label within a record company. Oscar De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather Jr., just to name two big examples within the last 20 years. When they reached a point of a big drawing power, they actually ended up doing their own promoting, right? Now, listen, they probably leveraged their name and their sweat equity. I don't know how much cash either had to put up exactly to do that. But at the end of the day, they became co-promoters. And also, it didn't happen without acrimony, right? Oscar De La Hoya, to do that, had to go to war with Top Rank, Bob Arum's Top Rank Promotions. Floyd Mayweather had a lot of difficulty as well, separating from Top Rank. This stuff happens, and it happens usually because fighters get fed up, the way Conor McGregor clearly seems fed up. We didn't see the just pure adulation after that win. like we've seen so many times before, right away he was insulting the UFC and the new owners and mocking how cheap, he called them cheap mother effers because he didn't have a second belt ready. He was right away putting them on blast and saying this is like a rinky-dink thing.
But if they had
thing.
That belt there, they might not have put him, he might not have put
he probably wouldn't have, but you could it's revealing that it was in his mind. And then when he talked, he followed up later and saying, I want equity. I think he has, if Conan O'Brien and Mark Wahlberg have some small piece of it, he has a good argument. Furthermore, and other boxers who are selling similar or less pay-per-views as him, I think he has a good argument to say it. And also, I think it's a pretty easy way for the new owners to like to make him happy. They can try to make him a client. And then they can give him a share like they do with other clients, which is a big ethical concern if you're promoting and managing someone in boxing and be against federal law. But they can do it. It's not against law right now in MMA. So I think it's an easy thing for him to do. I think it's a good argument to say he deserves it because he is just selling a ridiculous amount.
Yeah, what's also interesting is that McGregor tweeted about it in 2014.
Sure did.
And said he wanted equity. So this isn't like a new idea.
We all
this
thought
was
he was
always
just a loud
the end
mouth.
Game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, oh, look at this kid. Isn't that that's hilarious, isn't it?
But talking about fighters who are fed up, Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
He supposedly, I guess, was in New York, thought he was going to UFC 205. He said that they gave away his tickets to Nick Jonas, and they were trying to keep him out of UFC 205. And, of course, there was a video of him leaving a club, which was like Conor McGregor's. Supposedly where his victory party was and saying that he crashed it. Not that there's any evidence that he actually was ever inside or near him, but you know, that's the headline that's out there. So what do you make of the situation with Nate Diaz being kept away from the UFC 205? He says it's because they didn't want him to win this moment and then have Diaz lurking there to ruin it. What do you think, fair or foul?
Well, I don't know if he's telling the truth or not, but I think it's entirely possible. Like, he could just be making it up. Like, they're really good at promoting, and like you said with the club thing, who knows if he was in there? Who knows if the UFC did or didn't give him a ticket? Like, there's no telling. But I think he's right that the UFC is showing favoritism towards McGregor over him, and that the UFC hasn't shown an eagerness for them to fight again. I mean, after the first two that they had, the amount that they sold, and then the way the second one ended, which was a super close fight that everyone on their feet, you know, across the world watching, like, and then Dana White, first thing afterwards, like, no, we're not going to do a third one. Oh, you don't like money and excitement and like two guys that want to fight each other? Oh yeah, Nate and Conor both said we want to do it again right next. Like, so I think he's right that the UFC is trying to keep him away from Conor, which is a weird thing because I think if he's right that they're maybe trying to protect him and keep Conor as a golden child, the UFC that is, they're doing it at a moment where he's sending signals that he wants to go to war with them, you know. So it's a weird balancing act, protecting and fighting against the guy.
Do you think they make that fight, the next fight? It's the, you know, what everybody's talking about now, that he's the lightweight champion, that his first title defense should be against Diaz.
Well, I think it's an interestingly good argument, therefore, to be really unfair to Khabib or Tony Ferguson. But I write in this column, I think it'll be out tonight at mixedmartialarts.com, I think we should save our breath. I think Conor McGregor's next opponent is the UFC and the new ownership. I wouldn't look for him to fight anyone if he sticks to what he's saying other than them right now. Maybe that's one way that they can get him out there. But if he sticks to what he's saying, for asking for equity, I think there's going to be a lot of discussing to go on. And I think we're seeing a situation now where now that he's made the history with belts don't matter. Conor McGregor does.
Well, the belts are a promotional tool, anyways. At least that's how the UFC will contractually say it.
But, yeah, well.
And if that, speaking of which, going back to stripping them, if that's what they're truly there for, promotional purposes, you don't take them off McGregor.
But I agree, unless you're worried about him having too much power.
You know? They crossed that bridge.
But they really have now.
Speaking of which, while we're talking about his next opponent, of course, there was the infamous run-in with Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
So Floyd Mayweather was asked if he saw the fight, and he said he didn't. And he basically said it was disrespectful to compare McGregor to him.
Yeah.
So he made the comment that the elephants don't concern themselves with ants. And, of course, then they caught up with McGregor, who they asked what he thought of Floyd's comments. And Floyd McGregor basically said, tell him to say it to my face.
Yeah.
That's
an amazing response. So, and also, now Floyd's wrong. Now Conor McGregor sells as much as he does. And if you talk, like, per fight is in that area. And he does it a lot more often. So he sells more in, like, any given year than, or this past year, 2 years than you ever have. So Conor's he's a as big of a star as Floyd Mayweather, I think. A big of a draw, at least.
So that brings up the question, do you want to see it?
Depends on the rules. If it's in MMA rules, yeah, absolutely. Because it educates people on the difference between MMA and other fine, amazingly challenging, but much more limited structurally fighting styles. If it's in boxing, no, that's silly. I think I saw something Conor said he'll do it for $100 million. That sounds about right because he's losing in boxing, and Floyd is lasting a few seconds before having his world crushed around him in MMA. So I don't want it. If they fought MMA, yeah, I'll see anyone fight MMA because I think MMA is such a cool thing. Who's gonna win when there's very limited rules?
Throwback in the biggest of ways.
Absolutely.
But do you you don't think that if
best out of three, one of each, right? No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So boxing, then MMA, and then the third would be like the old school UFC where like Floyd could have a glove on but like a hand free and he could be wearing shoes.
That's fine. I think
that would be like the rubber match rules.
If Conor doesn't get hurt too badly in the first boxing one, I think he has a good chance to win two out of three there.
So do you think that Floyd wipes the floor with McGregor in the boxing ring, or do you think McGregor holds his own? I don't think that if McGregor can land one left, he can really swing momentum and make things interesting.
Oh, he definitely could. I think the thing that Conor McGregor has going for him, in addition to the fact that he's a very good functional boxer, what I mean by that is he's very good at taking boxing skills and putting him in a more realistic setting than a boxing match, which is actually harder to do, if you in a sense. But you put him in a more limited environment where it's just boxing. Someone who's only focused on that since before Conor probably ever did any martial arts, and Floyd Mayweather, he doesn't have a really good chance of connecting very often. But I think Conor's really good, but I think his only real chance is if Floyd's getting much, much older, much, much slower, right? Like maybe he can catch him because Floyd's about to be 40 and Conor's still in his 20s. Other than that, prime versus prime in boxing, I think Floyd that would be disrespectful to Floyd Mayweather to say that Conor McGregor would beat him. I know people are saying that, and good Mark Henry is saying that now and all that, but no, I don't. Conor McGregor showed amazing combinations against Alvarez, but he's not beating Bobby Fischer in chess, and he's not beating Floyd Mayweather in boxing.
The other thing is his stance. Mm-hmm. Like Conor McGregor's stance, I was thinking about that. Like, yeah. I don't know that would translate to boxing as well. He stands a lot wider than a boxer would because he's thinking about those kicks he likes to throw.
Right. No, it's so true.
And they're both counter strikers, which would be...
Yeah. Yeah, you might not have a ton of punches. Conor stance wouldn't do great in a Muay Thai. He'd probably get that leg eaten up. Might be better in boxing. But yeah, it's interesting. No, I think either guy in their sport demolishes the other more than likely.
Let's try and get Brian Caraway on the line right now. We haven't even talked about Joanna and Carolina.
Oh, man, that was an amazing fight.
Can you believe that Carolina lasted that long? That at the end of the fight, she was still
so tough. So tough. And had her moments, right? Like, buzzed Joanna several times. Made it really, really interesting and compelling. Yeah, she's... I'll continue on for a moment. Let me know when he's on, but if you want. But yeah, that was a crazy fight. That's about how I saw it. I thought Carolina wouldn't be able to keep up with the pace of Joanna for that long. Joanna's just too well conditioned. Carolina's can probably get it done in the future, become a world champion. But right now, Joanna's just she's just another beast right now against anyone other than like Claudia Gadella. I think it's just she'll make that gap become evident later in fights.
Yeah, we're having a little difficulty getting Brian on the phone. It seems to be a trend here. Hmm. Him and Joseph Benavidez, man. He's making an avocado sandwich.
But well, if he says I was making lunch, we're going to ask him what he was eating. We had a good conversation with Joe about
that. I mean, these West Coast people, it's lunchtime for them, so that very well should be the case. But with Joanna, I mean, do you feel like she won as impressively as we've seen her in the past? I mean, she came out of that maybe looking a little worse for the wear than Carolina did.
Yeah, well, I think she probably broke her nose. So, like, you jack up your nose.
And it makes everything look
worse.
Yeah,
yeah. And it also doesn't tickle. Like, it's real damage that Carolina deserves credit for. I think Joanna wins by decision sometimes. She goes against incredibly durable people. Like, Valerie Letourneau, she dominated that fight. But Valerie lasted because she's amazingly tough. And then she got some shots in. So, yeah, I think it's definitely a tougher fight than sometimes. But I don't think it was tougher than the fight against, like, Claudia Gadella, the second one, or maybe even the first one before she was a champion. So I think there's really, I think there's, again, I think we've talked about this in the past. We've got a dominant champion in a sense because she's defending her title a bunch. But it's also, there's a lot of parity at the top of that division. There's a lot of women. Like, Carolina's fight before that was a pretty close one, too. Like, there's the top of that strawweight division for women. There's, you know, any given night, any one of them can give the champion a lot of trouble.
She's, I mean, she's outlasting and outpointing people in a lot of ways. And that part of that was kind of what was so surprising about Carolina was to see her have that big fourth round.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true.
You know, it's weird because she's like right on the cusp of there being still enough parity, but like in the dominant cleaned out the division. You know, the Claudia, like there could be a third fight.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
That could be definitely something worth watching.
100%.
Carlos Barz is kind of working her way back into Jessica Andrade.
Aguilar?
No. Wait, who? She just
Andrade
fought.
Andrade is a bantamweight, right? Or no? Am I getting confused now? I might have been.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
we might both be, but go on.
Yeah, there's a, you know, there's some interesting matchups potentially there. So
there are, yeah. I mean, I would see her move up if they do 125 because I think the cut's tough. But
I mean, do you create a, like, you've seen the interest that's built around Conor McGregor, and do you think that you need to go out there and create a flyweight division and let Joanna do the same thing?
Well, yeah, I think there should, yeah. And I think first, not even having to do with her, there is a great women's flyweight division, and the UFC is behind the times and not including it. Just like there's featherweight.
And there's
like
a lot of women fighting at bantamweight who would be at flyweight. Jessica Ai.
Absolutely. One Misha of them. Tate, probably, who just retired, probably would have been a great flyweight. We've got Adam Waite before that, 105. We've got people forced to fight at 115 in the UFC right now that are like really Adam Waites. Someone like Alex Chambers, or the young lady who's going to be fighting. She's out of Jackson. They call her the Karate Hottie.
Michelle Waterson.
Thank you. Yeah. She used to fight at Atomweight. And maybe they're fine now above. But yeah, no, we need more divisions. And like, if there were, boy, Joanna would be a great pick to probably become a two-division champion as well. 100%.
Right. Well, anyways, let's... somebody in the chat's telling us Jessica Andrade is the girl that has the strength to challenge Joanna. And she fought the Scottish girl at UFC 203.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right,
and
she
dominated her pretty well.
Yeah.
Joanne Calderwood.
Yep.
So.
Well, she's got the strength. She definitely does.
That was Angelo chiming in with that comment, too. By the way, if you guys have comments, feel free to drop them in the comments below.
Thanks, Angelo.
We have someone saying Brock does have the WWE Universe behind him. Going back to the Fandom 250, WrestleMania gets pretty bonkers. And Jack saying, what are the chances Conor takes the welterweight title, in your guys' opinion? That's a good question. Not something we had talked about on our agenda, but there, one of the things this weekend was at the press conference, Conor McGregor saying he would take Tyron Woodley's belt, not that specifically, but the other belt over there, which was his. And then there was the when him and Eddie Alvarez were having that thing, and Tyron Woodley had his phone out, and I'm disappointed in him for not yelling out World Star, because how many opportunities in life do you have to film a video on your camera phone and yell out World Star? But anyways, he filmed it and he put it out there, and then him and Conor had some exchange on Twitter because Conor wasn't a fan. Then there was the incident kind of at the weigh-ins that seemed to get blown a little bit out of proportion from how the media perceived it. And I was there, and I, you know, saw it, and I was like, oh, because Tyron Woodley snapped back and looked at him, and you like, and Conor was staring and wasn't backing down.
I was calling,
but then when you watched it on the embedded, it seemed a lot more tame than it looked from afar. And then of course at the ceremonial weigh-ins backstage, they were getting into it and exchanging words. Conor was him and Habib, so there's definitely some buildup there. And then, interestingly enough, the belt that Conor lifted as a second was Tyron Woodley's.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some story there. And Tyron was at, or Conor was asked about it afterwards, and he was like, there might be a little foreshadowing there.
Right.
So back to the question, which was, what are the chances Conor can take the welterweight title, in your guys' opinion? I don't think very good against Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
Tyron Woodley is a big welterweight who's his size and just has a lot of muscle and hits hard. That being said, I've learned not to doubt Conor ever. Conor seems to be a master at game planning and sticking to it. And not that his game plan's varied that different between fights, but he's able to adjust accordingly and then make the most of it.
Yeah.
So, but I feel like
Yeah, it's a well. That's a horrible division for him. Everyone talks about Dana White talks about Nate Diaz being like the super heavyweight champion of the world or something. But Nate Diaz is a tall, slim dude who's a lightweight.
Nobody fights except for like a heavyweight. Right. Fights at a weight class where they don't cut.
Yeah, very.
And
few.
Conor, like, he weighs 170.
Right.
Walking around.
Yeah.
Tyron Woodley weighs 205 walking around.
I'm sure.
I mean,
he
makes Nate Diaz to be this beast, like, yeah, walking, you know, three times the size of me.
Nate,
that's
doesn't
Tyron
seem like,
Woodley, yeah, in real life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And like, no, there's no good matchups. Steve, you know, Conor's a better striker than Tyron, but Tyron's, you know, bigger and a better wrestler. Stephen Thompson is really tall. Damian Maya would, like, it just, it's a, it, listen, if you hang around and if you hang around and exchange punches with Conor McGregor at length, yeah, you're probably get knocked out eventually. But assuming these people aren't dumb enough to do that, they actually have the physical attributes, as Conor says, to give him problems. So Conor can knock out a mule if the mule stands there and lets him get a shot in. But if they fight, I don't like his chances. Again, I don't think who asked the question there? I forget.
Jack.
Good question. I really think Conor's next fight is the UFC at whole. So I don't think he has a good chance of fighting anyone right now, but other than them.
The thing is, he does this thing where he just sits there and he bounces on his toes and he bounces on his toes and he waits for the person to come in, which is totally something Tyron Woodley would do.
Sure.
He pushes forward very quickly.
Right.
And goes to land that big shot. And that's almost exactly what Jose Aldo did when he got caught.
Yeah.
And that's what Alvarez did when he got caught that first time, which looked visually almost identical,
yeah,
to the Aldo knockout.
That's true.
He came in forward, Conor backed out, caught him with the left, and he went down, and he popped up quicker. Otherwise, it would have been it would have been a mirror image of the Aldo.
No, that's true. Listen, Tyron shouldn't. He would have to make adjustments. He'd have to really give respect.
But
I don't
Tyron
care, you know. But
has a better chin than both those guys.
He has a better chin when it comes to taking punches from a featherweight. I'd imagine. Yep. I'd imagine so.
Right. Well, let's move on. We haven't heard from Brian Caraway, so apologies there. So we do have another guest on the line. We have UFC middleweight Gegard Mousasi. He's fighting Uriah Hall in the main event of the card at Belfast on Saturday, part of a doubleheader. So first up, how are you doing?
I'm good, Dutch. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us during what's a busy fight week for you.
No problem.
Now, you said you didn't think the UFC would make this fight. Were you surprised that they did?
Well, I didn't think they would make the fight because I think I'm in the top five. He's coming off losses and I'm coming off wins. So, but, you know, the Belfast main card fell off. They called me and I said yes. So they went and called Uriah Hall and convinced him to take the fight, and now we are here.
Now, you lost the first time you guys fought. Were you excited when they made this fight because you had a chance to avenge that loss?
Well, you know, I think because I said in the interviews I want to fight Anderson, or I want to fight as soon as possible, or I want my rematch with Uriah Hall. I think saying that in the media and after my performance against Vitor, I said I'm ready to fight this year very soon again. So I think I was available. So, and that's the fight I wanted, so the UFC could make it.
Now, have you looked at your last fight with Uriah Hall and analyzed it to see how you need to adjust?
Oh, you know, I can adjust to any style. I think that's my strongest point. You know, I got caught last time, and it's not going to happen soon because I'm not going to rush. I'm going to take my time. You know, I'm here to win. Decision, boring fight, knockout, submission, whatever comes. I'm not here to go crazy like the first time. I just think I'm gonna. I respect the guy. You know, he took the fight, so and he won fair and square. You know, you can't take that away from him. So, you know, he's always dangerous. So you have to respect that. And you know, overall, I think I'm the better fighter. So I'm gonna show that.
And you've lamented the way that people are talking trash to promote themselves. And we saw after your last fight, you were much more open and vocal in your post-fight press conference than you had been in the past. Are you seeing the benefits of it, and are you thinking about doing it more?
Well, I'm just just being me, you know. I'm not pretending to be somebody else. I'm just I'm more vocal. I just give my opinion. I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm just looking for the fight that I want, and if people call, ask me who you want to fight, I just give them straight answer. So, you know, Uriah Hall is a match that I always wanted, and Anderson, that was the fight that I wanted, simply because of his big name. And of course, I want to fight for the belt, but I'm not there yet, so it doesn't make sense to call out this thing, because, you know, you have guys ahead of me.
Now, from the outside, it appears like you're hungrier and maybe more motivated than you have been in the past. Is that true or accurate?
Yeah, definitely. You know, at the end of the week, end of the training camp, you're always tired. You're cutting weight. But last week, you're not so excited to fight. But, you know, I look forward to this fight. I know once the cage closed, I would like to finish him, you know. That's my intention, but like I said, I'm gonna take my time. So I'm not gonna do anything. I'm not gonna make any mistakes. It's gonna be calm and collected.
And since you brought up the title shot earlier, how far away do you think you are from earning this title shot?
Well, you know, after this, I think one more fight against a top contender, and I could be next. You know, the guys that are ahead of me now are Luke Rockhold and Jacare. Yo Romero is getting his shot. So those are the two guys, you know, I fought the Jacare. So probably if I win this, I will look for a fight against Luke Rockhold. But it depends when he's healed up and he's coming back. So I'm looking for someone that's going to get me a title shot.
Interesting. This is also your third fight in 5 months, fourth this year. Are you looking to kind of keep going at this pace?
Well, it depends, you know. I think one of the things is March, they have a UK show. It's close by to me, so I would like to fight there. But I hear also they're coming back to Holland, so I want to be on that card. So I have to, but most important for me is to fight in Holland. So I have to figure out when it is and if I have to fight one before or wait. But I heard something in May, June, I don't know when it is. So if I take rest, I'm going to be out for 6 months probably if I want to fight in Holland. So probably I will keep a busy one fight before that and hopefully fight middle of next year in Holland. So two fights very soon.
Now, they talked about the middleweight title being kind of like a four-man tournament with Weidman, Romero, Jacare, and Rockhold. Obviously, the Rockhold-Jacare fight came out or didn't come to fruition. But did you watch the Weidman-Romero fight, and what did you think if you did?
Well, you know, Weidman, I think afterwards you can always say, I think he was too much trying to grind it out, making his stamina the big factor in that fight to win the fight. And but, you know, Yoel Romero, I think he has, his stamina is not that great, but, you know, the guy is smart. He doesn't do a lot in the first, and then in the second and the third, he picks up the pace. And, you know, he just got caught. I think he did well in the first round. Second was for Yoel Romero. And, you know, Yoel Romero is a guy, he's coming back always in the third round. He's always dangerous because he paces himself for the later rounds because... He knows he cannot go three rounds full, you know. So he's a smart fighter.
Now, we were talking earlier on the show about Conor McGregor afterwards, his tirade in the cage, yelling at the UFC for not having the belt, not wanting to apologize to anybody. What did you think of his post-fight tirade?
You know, I enjoy watching him. He's entertaining. I got nothing against the guy. You know, he won, so you have to give him the respect to step up, you know. He steps up, so you have to respect that, you know. And other than that, you know, he overdo it sometimes, but he puts people on their seats, you know. He knows what he's doing to keep people be interested, you know. And it's actually good for all the UFC, you know. He brings a lot of attention, a lot of people, a lot of eyes. So you can't blame the guy for doing what he's doing. As long as he's not messaging me, he can do whatever he wants. I don't care.
Not that people need to emulate him or try to be him, but you say he's, you know, bringing people and attention to the sport. Are there lessons to be learned from him?
Well, you know, I felt Khabib was nice. You know, his interview, his press conference, not press conference, but he's after the fight. You know, it depends. People just need to speak up, you know, just a little bit. I don't say they need to go overboard. But, like, Khabib got also a lot of attention simply because he had a dominant win and he spoke his mind. And that's what people want. They don't need to somebody who's going to trash talk. People like just if people give their opinion, you know. I understand that being respectful or polite or humble or, you know, is not going to get you nowhere. You just, you don't need to go overboard to go crazy, but just say what you feel, and I think people appreciate that once you're yourself.
You mentioned Khabib. Does he get the next title shot in your mind?
No. They're gonna protect McGregor. That's not a fight that they're gonna do.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you this weekend with your fight.
No problem. Thank you.
So a couple interesting nuggets there from Gegard. I don't know where to start. One, he thinks that the UFC will protect Conor McGregor and not schedule him to fight Khabib, which is interesting and a popular opinion in a lot of people's minds. The other thing, he said he wants to fight Luke Rockhold. I don't know if you said that before.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. Actually, I sent the little Rockhold signal out when as he was saying that. We'll see if we get a response back from Luke, letting him know about that. But yeah, that's a great fight if they're both healthy and both ready.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that, you know, he also mentioned that he wanted to wait until wait to fight in the European cards.
Yeah,
you know, that's
good for him.
Obviously, a shorter trip and more important to him. But yeah, that's interesting. You know, let's talk about Rockhold Mousasi if that were to happen. Sure. I mean, I don't want to look past Uriah Hall by any means.
Of course. Obviously, he beat him already, but yeah.
What's your first read of that fight?
I think that's a really cool technical strikers match with two guys that are also really great grapplers. I think that could go either way. I think, you know, my initial thought is like Luke would want to mix up his striking with pressing against the cage and work to beat up and make Mousasi feel his size a little bit. But Mousasi has fought at 205 for many years. Like, he's not easy to push around, even if you're a little bigger than him. So I think that would be a really, really cool fight between two of the more well-rounded dudes in that division. So, yeah, I'd love it. If it ends up happening where it makes sense for both of their careers and the timing, that'd be a cool fight. And if it happened in Europe, it could be a headlining thing, right? Mousasi can headline something in the Netherlands. That'd be cool, yeah.
You know, and since their little four-man tournament kind of fell apart, why not make Rockhold Mousasi, if he were to be Uriah Hall, of course,
right.
A number one contender fight? That'd be fascinating.
Yeah, I think so.
And I might be wrong here, but I believe Mousasi beat Jacare when they fought.
What the hell? Let me look that up. No,
I'll look it up on a computer.
Let's see. Yeah, no, I would love that. Yeah, we still got a little bit of muddledness up there in the division, but with Rockhold being injured, I guess it sets him back where he, you know, a little bit, but he should still probably, if he comes back and wins whatever he fights next, you'd think he should be up there in contention.
Yeah,
anyway.
He lost.
He did lose, right?
2014.
I was going to say, because I don't remember the last time Hakone lost other than to Rockhold. So, okay, thanks for checking that. Which is a close decision. But yeah, no, that's a good fight. Yeah, how can I choke them out, right?
Yeah, I think it was a submission late in the third round.
Okay, yeah, that's I think that's a really cool fight, and I think Mousasi is coming into his own. He's always been an amazing fighter. He's fought internationally for forever, but he's coming into his own and feeling comfortable when he's talking. Like, we don't have like some long standing relationship with him, but he seemed really at ease. He was thinking about answers, elaborating. He was making some jokes. Like, he's a really fun, interesting guy. The guys that we know who like do interview him a lot, they've always said that. They said that fear is like, man, if this guy did interviews like he talks to me in private, like, he's hilarious. He's a fun guy. Like,
he's not over the top.
No, he's like subtle. You said, he's being honest.
But I mean, like, you might not have even caught that he threw in that little barb at McGregor. And for those of you who don't know, when he was like, as long as he's not messaging me, it's because there was this, supposedly he said some nice things about McGregor, and McGregor threatened him with a knife in Twitter DMs or something.
Yeah, right. It was a Twitter war.
Yeah, which is becoming more and more Conor McGregor's MO. Like, if you talk bad about McGregor, he's gonna call you out. Like, the Tyron Woodley posting the video of them fighting on stage. Yeah. Oh, we actually have Brian calling right now.
Oh, cool.
Hey, Brian, are you there?
Hey, yes, I am.
Hey, thanks for taking the time out to join us. You ready?
Yep.
Well, first of all, we wanted to talk to you about UFC 205. You got to kind of witness it without being a fighter and going through that. You were coaching. What was the whole experience like for you?
Heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking?
Completely heartbreaking.
Just because of the way that it panned out, you didn't really get to enjoy any of it?
No. I mean, there's a lot of deeper levels I could talk to for a long time, but just seeing someone's heart not be there. I think everybody's watched your fight before, and anybody that knows anything about anything fighting or MMA could see that she wasn't she wasn't even in the fight within the first, minute of the fight. You watch, like, all of her skill, technique, her movement, or everything. It was just her heart wasn't there, and there was no tenacity. There's just nothing there. And I knew right away, I didn't care if she was fighting, a little pink bunny rabbit out there. She wasn't going to win the fight, just by the way she was fighting. And, it was just really heartbreaking. I didn't expect her to say what she said after. That wasn't planned. Didn't know about that at all. And, I know that's obviously a big subject and story, but I really don't want to talk about it.
Understandable. I mean, it caught a lot of people off guard, and certainly I feel like a lot of people are trying to process it.
Yeah. Brian, obviously this is Elias, by the way, and you've got a big title contenders fight coming up with Jimmy Rivera real soon, and we're gonna dig into that, and we can jump right into that. I will say the thing I was thinking about asking you after this, and you definitely don't have to answer it if you don't want, because I don't think people have a great appreciation for just how much this stuff means to the people involved, and you guys have been in such a unique position for so many years where you're each other's coaches, training partners, and that's just, I can't imagine how difficult that is. I was going to ask you if you would have gotten any indication of the stuff that was worrying you in the fight as you watched it, like, before. And again, you don't have to answer that if you don't want. We can jump into the next one. But, I saw that you had talked to MMA Junkie, and you said, you'd seen some things that maybe disturbed you before, and I was just wondering if that had been something that had, you had seen some things in camp and stuff that maybe you didn't, that worried you even before the fight.
Well, I mean, nothing about the retiring, just how she, how she was fighting the last fights. Even when she won the world title against Holly Holm, she wasn't herself really. And, she won the fight, but, I'm not going to go on record and say, I guess what I don't feel like talking about what's going on. No, there's some things, the camp was, good. The fight week was actually probably the best fight week that we've actually had in probably 10 years. I mean, the whole fight week was phenomenal. Our weight cut went phenomenal. Like, it was one of the most stress-free weeks that I've ever coached her. As far as just everything was going, everything was going really smooth. It's just, there's factors that go into that kind of stuff. But yeah, I just don't feel like getting into it.
No, I can only imagine. And you've got your fight with Jimmy Rivera coming up, and I know it's going to be, you're going to do everything you can to flip whatever switch you have to do the rightfully selfish thing you got to do and focus in your own camp. Now, when you look at your opponent, obviously he's, he's got a great win streak together, and he's got a good record and all that. But when you look at the matchup, what do you see in Jimmy Rivera, if you're honest, Brian, and how do you think he matches up or compares maybe to overall quality of opposition of guys you've already faced and mostly beaten? Because, whether or not everyone is recognizing it, you've got one of the most impressive records in the division, and you're beating the who's who of title contenders out there. So I'm curious what you see in the matchup and how you think he compares to guys you've already beaten.
I think he's definitely a top contender. I always believed that Jimmy Rivera was, before he was even signed with the UFC, I watched him fight. I've known him for a long time. He actually fought on Ultimate Fighter the same season that I did, and he lost to my friend Dennis Bermudez, who he was actually handily winning that fight. And then Dennis caught him in a bad position, and the ref stopped the fight, I think, entirely too early. But, you know, I think he's a top, you know, he's a top top fighter in the world, and he's where he's at, where, you know, for a reason. And he'll be a great challenge. And, you know, I'm excited to get in there and test myself, you know. He's a young up-and-coming guy. He's got a lot of fire. He's on a good win streak. And he's got a lot of confidence building behind him. But I think, you know, look at his competition, who he's been fighting. He hasn't fought anybody like me. The one guy that I could say that he fought that was legit is, you know, Faber. But Faber's on his way out. You know, I feel like Faber kind of fell in love with the striking game a lot. You know, he got away from the Faber that made him successful. You watched Faber in the WC days, or even the early UFC days when he first got in there, he would get in scramble situation with guys and he'd take him down and he'd elbow him and he'd grind on him. And he kind of got away with that and just started, you know, trying to kickbox people and kind of fell away from his strengths. And, you know, I see that happen a lot of wrestlers, a lot of people kind of fall in love with striking and or get away from, you know, their game plan. And I don't know if it's just because Faber's been around a long time. He's kind of at the end of his road. You know, I think he jumped back in there right away after coming off the, you know, loss to Dominic Cruz. And I think he was emotionally not 100% either. And not to take anything away from Jimmy, because he executed his game plan perfectly. He did exactly what he needed to do. And I think he's a tough opponent for anybody. But I really believe that, you know, I'm the next world champion. And I believe that no matter who gets put in front of me, I'm going to impose my will. And whether they know it or not, my game plan or not, and I'm going to come out the victor.
On the flip side of that, you mentioned Faber getting away from what his wrestling, which made him so successful. Do you see somebody like Damian Maia is kind of laying the ground? You know, if you stay true to your grappling roots, you can extend your career.
I feel like me and Damian Maia are, you know, brothers from another mother. I love that guy. You know, I love his, exactly, you know, people might hate or not. I feel like I'm more more well-rounded. I can have good striking. Obviously I beat Eddie Wineland, who was a former WC world champion. And, you know, I beat him at his own game. You know, he's one of the best strikers in the division. I out kickboxed him that whole fight. And, you know, people like to sleep on my striking because my grappling is such a high level. But yeah, you know, I think that's something that Damian and I have really in common, is we know what our strengths are and we're not afraid to go out there and implement that and get away from what we know is going to, you know, win the fight. Because ultimately we know it's an entertainment sport, but ultimately winning fights is what gets you world titles. And, you know, it's what pays the bills, you know, fighting excited and getting your paycheck cut in half, or possibly getting, you know, cut from the UFC. You know, it's a hard balance to say, well, if you're the most exciting fighter, you look at Leonard Garcia, he lost a lot of fights, but how exciting did he have to crazily be to be able to, you know, keep fighting after that many losing streaks? And he eventually still got cut. You know what I mean? And, you know, that was his strength anyway. So it's kind of being a brawler. So we had a lot of punching power. So I think it's just, you know, it's an important to make your own style exciting, you know. And I feel like I'm an exciting fighter. You know, I have a lot of movement, and my grappling, my takedowns are very unique. And I think I, you know, make it very exciting for scrambling. I think the fans are getting more educated on what's happening on the ground and grappling. And I think people are starting to appreciate, you know, catch wrestling and jiu-jitsu a lot more these days.
Personally, that's my favorite part. I love watching that aspect of things. But, you know, you talked about your knowing your strengths and weaknesses. You're also really smart when it comes to the sport, not only in the cage, but I feel like you're becoming really smart outside of the cage, and it seems like you're tactfully picking opponents. You fought a guy in Aljamain Sterling and beat him, an undefeated fighter with a lot of momentum. You've kind of made that momentum yours. Jimmy Rivera's coming off that big Faber win that you were talking about. Now this is another young up-and-coming guy. You're making his momentum yours. Is that the kind of thought process going into it when you're trying to, you know, figure out what's next for you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can plan so much, but I realize you got to bite down on your mouthpiece and fight eventually. I really wanted that John Lineker fight, for one, because he's ranked number two. He's ranked even above Jimmy Rivera. And number three, I would smoke him. You know what I mean? Like, I think Jimmy Rivera presents a lot more problems than John Lineker. He runs around a lot. He doesn't like to engage in a fight more. He tries to make it a mixed martial arts. And what I liked about John Lineker is he'll stand in front of me and he'll fight me. You know what I mean? There's a difference between someone who's going to fight me and someone who's going to play a mixed martial arts game. And I don't try to back up and pick people apart. You know, and even though that is a sweet science itself, and I have mad respect for that, like, you know, that's just not my style. I like to come forward. I grapple, punch. I'm going to come and fight you. You know, I can tactically beat you. Oh, sorry, that's a tongue twister. I can beat you, you know, technically, but still by still coming forward and trying to push the fight. You know, I'm not trying to win a split decision or trying to win a decision. I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. I'm not trying to be a decisionator. You know, I'm not trying to just, you know, do enough on the scorecards and win. I'm trying to come forward and I'm either trying to knock you out or I'm trying to submit you and finish you, you know, submit you. Like, I don't want it to go to the judges' scorecards. And, you know, every second of that fight, I'm trying to figure out how to finish you, how to knock you out or take you down and choke you.
Nick, you mentioned wanting to make a push for the title shot. Is it frustrating to kind of see the triangle that's developed at the top of the division between Cruz, Garbrandt, and Dillashaw?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, where'd Garbrandt come from? Yeah, he's beating guys. But you know what? Look, he's beating tough guys, but it's a lot more, I think, marketing than anything else. I mean, he jumped from, like, number 8 in the world to, like, number 5. Like, they moved him up a bunch of spots just to justify him fighting for the title because there's guys like me in front of him that rightfully deserve to fight for the title. Not saying Garbrandt can't go out there and knock out him. Not saying his skill's not there. Not saying any of that, but, like, he hasn't put in his time. You know, I beat the number 6 guy in the world, and then I just beat the undefeated Aljamain Sterling, who's number 4 in the world, you know, who is 12-0 and had, you know, finish wins over top-level guys. And then you have Garbrandt, who's knocked out, you know, Thomas Almeida, but who had Almeida beaten to even get inside the top 10? Almeida hadn't beaten a single top 10 ranked opponent to get inside the top 10. He was ranked the top 10 off of hype because he was 21-0. He hadn't beat anybody. He hadn't beat a single guy in the top 10, and they put him in the top 10, and then Garbrandt comes in and knocks out a guy who hadn't proved himself, you know, in the UFC, really, even though he was on a 4-5 win streak, but against who? Not top contenders. And, you know, like I said, not to take anything away from Garbrandt, I think the kid's super talented. He has a bright future, and he's a very dangerous fighter. As you can see, he's knocking guys out. And stylistically, I believe that's why he got the fight. You know, he knows how to run his mouth. He knows how to talk. I guess it's the whole Chael Sonnen and Conor McGregor. You talk a lot of shit, and that's what gets you up front. You know, and it's not really my style. You know, I don't really play out that game, but, you know, I guess that's where the sport's going to. It's just really unfortunate for me because I'd rather be, you know, good sportsmanship and be a good role model for people and instead of, you know, talking a lot of trash and moving forward like that. I think there's a better way to represent the sport, and you know, I hope that it gets recognized, you know, and, you know, we'll see. I don't know. It's just, I'm going to keep putting my head down and keep on the grind, and, you know, maybe I'll start being a little bit more vocal in interviews, and, you know, I think my time's coming, you know.
I was gonna say you didn't do a bad job of it so far with us. Like, you know, you're not you're not talking trash, but you're giving, like, Gegard Mousasi, who was on before you, just saying, hey, I'm giving you honest answers, right? So I think you know, along those lines, I was kind of curious. I don't know what your time on the mats may have, how much they may have overlapped or not, but, like, did you ever get much work in with Cody Garbrandt over at Alpha Male?
No, I was gone way before he came. Like, I was there in, like, 2010. You know, like 5 years before he even came. So, you know, I haven't got to work with him at all, but I know a lot of guys that have trained with him there that I'm still friends with. And you know, the kid's talented, but he's got a different skill set than what I have. And you know, what goes in my favor is Garbrandt isn't afraid to fight. He's not one of the guys who'll run from you. And that's the type of guys I like to fight because it's going to end. It's going to end before the judge's decision. Somebody's getting knocked out, somebody's getting choked. And that's what I like. I don't like a guy who's just trying not to fight me and trying to win a decision. So, you know, I welcome that fight, too. I called him out. You know, he called me out. I guess he was trying to call me out, and then they switched it up to a fight. So I called him back out. I said, well, okay, let's do this. And then all of a sudden he didn't want to do it, and then next thing you know, he gets the title shot. So I said, you know, if I'm not going to get the title shot, I want to fight John Lineker because he's ranked, you know, really high in the top 5, or I wanted to fight Garbrandt because he's got a lot of – he's got a lot of hype. He's talking a lot of crap. He wanted to fight me, and then, you know, they bypassed me and gave him the title shot because they think it's going to be a more exciting fight, you know, because, you know, Dominic Cruz is predominantly a striker, and so is Cody Garbrandt. So they think it's going to end in, you know, a fantastic striking match, I guess. I don't know. It seems like that's what the UFC is pushing these days. They don't really like, you know, Damian Maia's, and they don't really necessarily like my style, even though I don't just grapple, you know. I'll strike with guys. I was trying to strike with Aljamain Sterling a lot more, but he would just run away, and I was trying to call him out, you know, throwing up my hands, and it was, that fight was either a matter of who's going to get on the wrestling first. Is he going to shoot and take me down first, like in the first round, or am I going to beat him to the punch? And you know, it was unfortunate. That's why I was excited to fight somebody like Garbrandt Lineker, who I knew was going to stand in front of me, and we could throw punches, and we can be mixed martial artists. We can strike, and we can wrestle, and we can grapple, and we can show what mixed martial arts is about.
Now, you mentioned a little nugget in there that you prefer to fight somebody who wants to fight as opposed to somebody who tries to fight for points. Does that mean that if you were to have a rooting interest in their fight, that you would prefer to see Garbrandt win and fight him for the title as opposed to Cruz?
Yeah, I think so, honestly, because he'll stand there and fight, you know what I mean? And Dominic Cruz is a really tricky puzzle, and I have mad respect for that guy, because people, first of all, the way he's went through an adversity is, you know, that's an inspiration to not only me, but it should be to anybody, to see him going through all his knee surgeries and all those injuries, and to come back and to regain his world title. That's just, I think, you know, Dominic Cruz should go down in the history books forever. Like, he's one of my favorite fighters, even though he runs and like that. He's so artistic in the way he moves and the way he strikes. He puts so much expression into it, and he's such a passionate guy. Like, I'm a big fan of Dominic Cruz, and although I appreciate his fighting style, I don't necessarily like it. As far as, like, guys I like fighting, I like guys who will come forward and finish. I loved when I seen him fight Mizugaki, and he came forward a lot more, and he took him down, and he mixed up, you know, finished him on the ground. He knocked out Mizugaki. I like seeing that passion come back, and then I feel like when these guys get to the top of the sport, it's really hard for them to lay it on the line like that. So they start becoming, you know, a lot more precision fighters, kind of like I saw with Frankie Edgar, one of my favorite fighters ever. When he first got in the UFC, he was having these barn burner wars with Thiago Tavares and Tyson Griffin, and was mixing up wrestling, striking, and super excited. And then he realized, like, man, this is kind of dangerous. You know, this is crazy, like, you know, getting too much. And he realized, like, hey, I'm faster than these guys. I have a little bit cleaner striking. I can just hit these guys and run. I can hit these guys and run, and I can win these decisions. You know, it's easy money for them. And, you know, although I understand his position as a fighter and paying the bills and all that stuff, but, like, I respect somebody a lot more who's going to just bite down their mouthpiece and try to finish the fight. It comes down to finishing. That's why I always love Kenny Florian. He always tried to come forward and finish fights, whether it's by knockout or by submission. So although I have mad respect for Dominic Cruz's style, because nobody can fight the way he fights. And to come back through with the adversity that he came back through is inspirational. But is it my favorite fighting style? Absolutely not. I like guys who try to finish.
Do you see Jimmy Rivera as being one of those guys?
I don't. I think Jimmy Rivera, he has finished guys, but I think he's, you know, I think he's calculated, but I think he's a guy also who you know, he doesn't try to fight to finish. He just tries to fight almost not to lose.
And he hasn't lost since really early in his career. Do you feel like you've cracked the code or figured out the puzzle?
Well, yeah. You know, I don't know about figuring out the code or puzzle. I just think that, you know, who's going to want it more, and ultimately who's going to want it more, and whose skill set's going to overshine the other person's skill set, you know, who's going to be able to impose their will. And I believe in my heart that I'm going to be able to impose my will over him. And I believe that my skill will triumph over his skill. And that's what it really comes down to: who wants it more, and who has the actually athletic and, you know, who actually has the skill. You know, sometimes heart will override skill, and sometimes, you know, someone just doesn't quite have enough skill. They try, and you see these people get beat up in the cage, and they get dropped 3-4 times. They keep getting back up, and they just quite don't have the skill. I believe that I have, you know, one of the biggest hearts and the best chins in the division. And I believe that I'm one of the most talented guys in the world, and definitely the most talented guy when it comes to, you know, jiu-jitsu and grappling in our division.
And we'll leave you with this last question. Your fight's in early January, or mid-January, I guess. Is it rough having a training camp over the holidays?
Extremely rough. I mean, I was begging the UFC to give me a fight in December. I even asked Jimmy Rivera, I'm like, dude, let's fight sooner. Let's have Christmas. Why are you afraid of me, man? You need the full camp. That's why. That shows me a chink in his armor right now. I'll fight him tomorrow. Like, where are you at, bro? Like, if you're listening to this interview, step up and fight me. If one of these cards fall out, you know, I heard that the Melbourne card, the main event, fell out. I'm sure they replaced that, but I was begging to fight him on that card. Fight me anytime, anywhere. You know, let's fight before Christmas and then have our time with our family. But inside word from his camp is that they're afraid of me. They need more time to like try to crack my code and figure out how to beat me. And how to beat me is basically punch and run and not fight me. The only way Jimmy Rivera is going to fight me is throw little flippy kicks out there, jab and run, throw flippy kicks and jab and run. And that's how he's going to beat me, you know? Put his money where his mouth is, you know? Step up and fight me.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you in your fight. We can't wait to see it in January.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me.
Take care. Or earlier, hashtag fight me before Christmas, bro. Hashtag let Brian eat. That's awesome. I love that he's out there. He's like, no, let's fight now and then let's eat later.
Now, anytime a main event or a fight gets pulled out, like that's immediately where my attention's going to turn.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to be like, the first thing, like if a fight gets pulled out, the Albany main event or something, I'm going to immediately go to Brian Caraway's Twitter and try and see if he's already angling for that fight. So wanted to move right along because we're running out of time, but we have Uriah Hall on the phone. Uriah, how are you?
What's up?
Sorry for the delay in getting started. You shared a story about being intimidated yesterday when you're doing a Facebook Live about being intimidated when you fought Gegard Mousasi the last time in Japan. You won that fight. So is this fight week different?
Not really. You know, he's going to be a little more hungry. He's going to be more cautious. I mean, you've seen his fights after mine. He's just like, I'm not messing around anymore, which is good. So I woke him up. If anything, I think I kind of helped him out. So he said, all right, I'm at the best at myself, so let me take him out. So bring that shit on, man.
Hey, Uriah, this is Elias. Dan Henderson said he, before this last rematch, this last fight he had, he never wanted to rematch Michael Bisping because he knew he would never be able to top his first win, that knockout walk-off KO at UFC 100, and only the belts being on the line made the difference for him. So we're curious, what's your reasoning here in taking this fight, especially because it's on short notice, against someone that you did beat really convincingly in highlight fashion?
No, it was just an opportunity. The first guy couldn't do it. Didn't call me. It made sense. He was from Europe. He's looking for an easy win again. I heard his career, and he's looking to get over that hump. He didn't see a guy like me beating him, so why not? So I was like, fuck it, let's go.
Now, some fans have pointed out that you've traveled a lot for fights lately. Is that something you enjoy, or is it more frustrating?
No, I hate it. It's very frustrating. It's a lot of frustration because the time difference is frustrating for tax purposes. It sucks, but it's your job. And at the end of the day, it's an opportunity. So when an opportunity presents itself, you kick that bitch down and you introduce yourself. That's what I'm doing.
And of course, everybody was watching UFC 205 this weekend. You have ties to UFC to New York City. What did you think of the event?
I think it was good. First time being in New York, it was a big card. Didn't see most of the fights. Caught the ending of the Joanna Jurcic fight. I love watching the girls fight. There's no feeling out process. Who was after that?
Tyron Woodley.
That was a good fight too. Very dramatic. And then it was the main event. Kind of took Homeboy apart. Did with style. Looked pretty good, man.
Now, you're a fighter that really appreciates the technical side of things. Do you ever envision yourself moving into an analyst role in the future?
Absolutely. I love doing stuff like that. I see holds. I see a lot of things differently. I mean, I can look at a person, look at their body type, and just right away tell them what their strength should be and what their weakness should be and what their style should be. So, I would love to do that. Maybe like after this, commentary-wise, I was approached by an anchor. So I'm like, yes, I can just do that too.
Yeah.
I speak well. Which is funny because I met a guy who said, oh my God, you speak well. You're a fighter? I'm like, was that a compliment? How am I supposed to take that?
Yeah, I don't know how you're supposed to take that. That could be viewed a lot of different ways. As someone, who thinks of themselves as an analyst and enjoying the technical side of things, what did you think of the title fight between Thompson and Woodley?
You look at Tyron, he got some big shots. with the judging system, I don't know how these people are educated. It's more like, well, if the person's backing up, then he's winning. But if the person's backing up, then he's not getting hit. Kind of like what happened to me and the Natal fight, which was like, I mean, I didn't think I did too much, but I think I did enough to win that fight. And it was like, huh? I had the cleanest shots, but it the judging system is stupid, man. It's just really stupid. I would love to see that fight again, though. I think they both had a really great, fantastic matchup. Tyron really got a little gas at the end, and Wonderboy just kept pressing forward, but I guess he didn't throw enough, you know. But it was crazy because you throw too much, you get caught. You don't throw enough, you won't progress, because Tyron is he just needs that one shot. And Wonderboy, you just got to wonder what's going to happen. Perfect matchup.
And you mentioned the scoring system, which obviously was a big talking point. What is a better way of doing or scoring MMA fights?
Yeah, allow these judges to really understand and get really educated on what the fuck they're doing, and not use the boxing system, which is fucking ridiculous. It's one-dimensional in boxing. And use some common sense. If I'm beating you up and you take me down, like, what, 10 seconds? How the fuck are you winning? It's stupid. I don't get it. I really don't. So it motivates you to just go out there and just take out the person first and not leave it to the judges. That's probably one of the best advice I've ever heard from Dana.
So we're doing this thing called Fandom 250. We talked about it early in the show, where we're ranking the best fan bases in the world, sports, entertainment, everything. So I want to know, what are you a fan of? What do you like to do in your free time?
I like to do... I go to when I go to New York or California, mostly New York, I go to schools. My buddy, he worked with kids, so he's always invited me to teach the kids and talk to them. I love that environment because, you know, they're the future. I'm not going to do this forever. I used to be an instructor, and I didn't realize how I was inspiring a lot of kids, a lot of 3- and 4-year-olds. Parents would bring them to me, and I would teach them martial arts, but the dessert, the best part of that was the fundamentals of never quitting, of never giving up. And that's something very hard to teach a child. And if you can teach a child that mentality and say, hey, man, it's going to get tough, but you got to understand when it gets tough, you got to keep going, or you got to change your mindset a little bit to get ahead. Then you mold them into a champion. It doesn't have to be specific champion in sport, but champions in life. I love that feeling of helping and giving back, especially kids, because in my youth, I got bullied. And I wish I had someone come to school and be like, hey, it's going to be okay. You can't quit. And right now it might be a little rough because this is all you know. But if you don't quit, I promise you can be anything you want to be. I have to figure that out for myself. And now, knowing this, whenever I get a chance, I give it back. And that's very important to me.
That's a very special cause, and you deserve all the praise in the world for doing that and working with those kids. So know that it's appreciated. And best of luck to you in your fight coming up this weekend. Thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us during fight week.
Thank you.
All right. That brings us basically to the conclusion of the show. We heard from Gegard Mousasi and Uriah Hall, who both fight in the main event of the Belfast portion of the doubleheader. Yeah. We'll talk to Lil Nog and Ryan Bader and upload that as a separate show or episode of the podcast tomorrow. Or tonight. You can download it on iTunes after this. So thank you to everybody who tuned in to listen. My name is Mike Dice.
I'm Aliyah Cepeda.
Make sure to subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review and a written review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week, same time, Wednesday, 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern. Follow Extra Rounds on Twitter, and we'll let you know who's scheduled to be on the fight. We might have to get Luke Rockhold on now.
Yeah.
A reason to talk to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you, everyone, for tuning in.